Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where we love preseason football because it takes place in the dog days of summer. It's kind of a biased phrase when you think about it. Like, why isn't it the dog days? And why is it negative, first of all? Throw that out there. I mean, Greg Rosenthal, my guest today. Delighted to be joined by him from the NFL Network. You can listen to him on Around the NFL, which is a podcast I've been listening to for a while. And you can read his stuff on NFL.com. What am I leaving out, Greg?
No, that's about it. We do enough podcasts. I was really looking forward to hearing the intro song. Like, the most banging podcast
is it?
Intro
you think so?
In the game. But didn't get to, you know.
Oh, right, because you don't have your headphones on. See, that's the problem, because I think guests need to hear it to get into that right mentality. It's like a pre-game warm-up. It's like a jock jam, kind of, when you think about it.
I'm, amazed you don't just kind of, bump along to it every time.
I usually do when I'm at home, and I'm glad no one sees that. Greg, how are you enjoying the preseason?
I love it. I'm ready for it to be over. This is the time of year that you're just excited about I could talk and do talk too much about every team and player is kind of equally fascinating. Yeah. But now you're at the point of the preseason where you're just okay, let's get on with it.
I read, so Pro Football Focus does these kind of stock up, stock downs reports after every game. And I always find myself reading them and then halfway through being like, this person, I'm not going to need to know the name of this person most of the time, during the regular season. But I read them anyways because Puna Ford is a name you will know very soon.
I assume we know it from last year. He made
the real
mark.
Ones know.
Yeah. And media gets more access this time of year. It's kind of a sneaky part. I've been reading a lot of The Athletic, I feel is kind of killing it right now.
On the preseason.
In general. Because the rest of the year, you can't watch practice, not real practice. And
yes.
This is the only time of year that you watch practice. And the things that they learn in the first 20 days, players that show up and are just different players, that carries over a lot.
Best shape of their life.
Not that so much.
I hear.
Just any article that has a preseason MVP in it, I'm all about
that. Do you feel like this preseason, do you think the quality of play, is it all diminished? Because that's kind of a conversation going around the NFL. Now, obviously, the Rams barely play any of their starters. Some teams do, though. I turned on the Saints game the other night, and Alvin Kamara was playing, deep into the second quarter. So it's obviously varied team to team.
It's less important. I mean, because more teams are following Sean
McVay model,
of just sitting everyone. The Patriots pretty much have, the Jaguars, the Eagles, the Bears. It's growing. I mean, they've basically eliminated two games of the preseason.
Right.
And they're going to. I think this is, next year is the last time
we'll get a
four-game
preseason.
We'll ever have four-game
preseason. Yeah, you think that they're headed toward... I mean, I don't think 18 games is happening, but it seems to me like the expanded playoff field, shorter preseason, is gaining a little bit of heat right now. It's a little less objectionable.
Roger Goodell's been complaining about the preseason since this CBA was signed. He's been pretty consistent about that. I do actually think they'll find a way to knock it down to two or three. Kyle Shanahan said it well. He wants one game to kind of knock the rust off and one to see all the guys at the bottom of the roster.
Speaking of knocking the rust off in a 49ers game, did you catch... This is before we get into the conceit of the show, which I'll just explain. I want to talk about people of interest. Person of Interest was a CBS show from 2006, 11 through 15, I think. I know this. I never saw the show. I used to see the promos. This is the thing. If you watch a lot of NFL, you end up just knowing so many CBS procedurals that you will never watch, right? Do you remember there was maybe this was ABC. I don't know. There was a detective show where one of the detectives was a robot. A year ago.
No.
Kind of like Chappie. I felt like I knew so much about this show, but then I realized it had just kind of been subliminated into my consciousness from watching promos during football games. So Person of Interest was a show with Tara G.P. Henson. Was on it. And the only reason do you ever do the thing where you see a bunch of promos for a show and then you end up reading about it on the internet because you want to know what it's about? And then 30 minutes go by and you've read recaps of all five seasons because you just really wanted to know who the person of interest is.
I love those commercials because they're ones that now I can't remember any of them, but right. I could say them all by heart on Sunday afternoons. And we watch all the games, like the guys I do the podcast with at Around the NFL. We watch all the games together, so you know those commercials by heart.
There used to be a show called The Mayor. I think this one's ABC. I can't remember. But I had a friend who was a writer on The Mayor. It's called, and I at a party was talking to him, and I just recited the promo for The Mayor by heart because I had seen it so many times during football games. Anyways, we are going to talk about persons of interest, and you could put Jimmy into that category.
I'd put him there.
Would you put him there? Okay, if there's that red alert system, I don't know what the difference. There's yellow, orange, red. Where are you? Green, and I get green, yellow, orange, red.
I'm yellow, but I would have been before camp started.
Right, because of last season.
Because of, it was only three games, but it wasn't a great
rough
three games. Like, he held the ball really long in those three games. I do keep in mind with him his reputation in New England that he was never that good in practice. People didn't love Jimmy G in practice. And then when he played in games, he was great for the most part.
Yes.
But you do look at the people that have started, you know, he started... What, 11 games in his career? And like the people, you know, that is or 8 games
not
for the
a lot of games.
For the 49ers. Like the other people that have started 11 games this decade, I think were like TJ Yates was one of them. CJ Beathard is one of them. Like he's almost a rookie in terms of his experience. And it's worth wondering if he fits with Kyle Shanahan.
Who does? Well, Kirk Cousins.
Don't you think?
Kirk Cousins does. But yeah, no, I agree. For those who missed it, you probably should give some context. Jimmy Garoppolo appeared Sunday night. Today's Tuesday, goodness. In action for the first time. I have been traveling a lot. His first four passes were either swatted or picked or a combo. Had a 0.0 quarterback rating. Caveats. His offensive line was terrible. Bradley Chubb apparently decided to make his life miserable. Bradley Chubb looks amazing, but that's neither here nor there. And Shanahan gave a bunch of excuses, which are actually valid, which is, you know, it's preseason, vanilla looks, yada, yada, I can't do with the offense what I want to do. But I will say he looked tepid, timid to me. He looked like he wasn't stepping into his throws. He looked like he was hearing footsteps, which are things that happen when you return from a torn ACL. And that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be like that for the rest of his career, but I think it is reasonable to think, hey, the first month or so could be pretty hairy in San Francisco.
Yeah, not only has he not started many games in Kyle Shanahan's offense, but he's coming back from a torn ACL. Tom Brady, when he returned, that was the big story in the 2009 preseason, was that he looked very skittish. Yeah. I would say that was the
same. He looked like Brady. It actually reminded me a lot, the way he wasn't stepping into his throws.
And that was true even into week two of 2009, which maybe was the worst year of Tom Brady's career, which isn't, at least since the first couple seasons, which isn't that big of a surprise because returning from a torn ACL is really hard. So it's a lot going against them. And I have always wondered, they kind of took Jimmy G because he was just offered to them on a platter.
Yes.
Like, why wouldn't they say yes at that moment? But is he what Kyle Shanahan sees as his ideal quarterback? He's not like a bootleg guy.
Yes.
You know, there's a totally different system in New England, which... You know, Bill Belichick was ready to go with Jimmy G for the next 5 to 10 years, and he fit that system. But does he fit in Kyle Shanahan's system? I think it's early to say that.
A notoriously difficult system. Like, Matt Ryan famously didn't pick it up at first. It took him a year or so. And I've seen people roasting John Lynch fairly for some of his drafts, I think, and for the Jimmy G contract. But they can get out of that contract so easily. I don't understand. I guess there's the question, oh, maybe we shouldn't have paid him that much. But they can get out of it with ease after
they
could
trade him. So. Anyone. He would not be a hard guy to trade, even with that contract. I guess this year it was a total disaster, but even then you would be able to get something.
All right, so before we get to the people of interest, not just Tara G.P. Henson, I want to take a quick second to tell you about the new season of 30 for 30 podcast. Greg is in the room, so he's seeing the thing I do when I read ads, which is I emphatically gesture with one of my hands. This new season is a five-part series on former Clippers owner Donald Sterling, who was ousted by the NBA after being caught on tape making racist and sexist remarks. The series, which explores Sterling's career and how this incident changed the NBA forever, is hosted by ESPN's Ramona Shelburne. It's called The Sterling Affairs, from 30 for 30 Podcasts and The Undefeated. Find it wherever you get your podcasts or at 30for30podcast.com/Sterling. I did give it a listen, and it's very excellent. Sterling Affairs is a good name.
Mm.
Sterling Silver would be good.
You got to be careful because you can't be too like cutesy when it comes to Donald Sterling.
It's a pretty serious topic. So I take that back. The first person of interest, Greg, that I want to talk about is someone that you wrote about recently on NFL.com, Jadeveon Clowney.
Mm. I am fascinated to see if Bill O'Brien kind of wants to make the first move of the Bill O'Brien era where he's just totally in charge, trading away Jadeveon Clowney.
So you think he's completely in charge because obviously there's no one in charge in Houston right now?
Yeah, I think he's in charge. I think he's been most in charge the whole time. I mean, I think all you got to do is look at what's happened.
Yeah.
Rick Smith and him had what was not even a secret fight essentially going on behind the scenes for years, of which Bill O'Brien won. He got Brian Gain out of the building. I wonder in my mind if he just watched like a couple weeks of OTAs this year and was so mad at Brian Gain for not trading up to get Andre Dillard or for allowing the Eagles to do that he just pushed him out. They have a new owner, which I think gets overlooked, even though it's the last name McNair. It is Cal McNair, which is the son and the wife. You know, the wife's in the mix, and I feel like Bill O'Brien's probably had the juice the whole time, but now, yeah, he's just running the show.
Has there ever been a non-wealthy person named Cal, is my first question.
No.
Cal, do you watch Succession?
No.
Cal McNair is such an excellent Succession name. My second question is, and before we get to your story, you kind of explored what it would mean for them to trade him, to whom, et cetera, and I want to get to that with you because it does seem like it's something that's frothing, shall we say.
I mean, the hand gestures are amazing. At some points, it's like you're conducting a symphony. It's great.
Oh, I wish usually people don't have to see this. I want to say, first of all, I think they should have paid him. I believe, and I want to get your take on this. I think they should have given him a long-term extension. Now, the argument against it is the single-digit sacks, right? And it's like, how do you pay this guy who's, pay him like an elite pass rusher, like a Lawrence or a Khalil Mack, if he's putting up 9, 9.5 sacks, to which I would respond, well, one, his quarterback hits are usually in the same category. Actually, he had more than Khalil Mack over the last 2 years. So it's not like he's not disrupting the quarterback. He's also a significantly better run defender than those guys, in my opinion. And they use him differently in that Texas defense. So I want to just start off by saying, if I was the GM in Houston, I would have paid him. How do you feel about that?
You'd have a lot less job security if you were. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, this kind of goes into one of my favorite hot takes, which hasn't really caught on, which is cap space is incredibly overrated.
Yeah.
Not only, like, the whole idea of you better win in that window with your rookie quarterback, you know, before they get that big deal, even that's overrated. Because most teams don't use all their salary cap space, especially not the last few years. They're starting to a little more. Houston has $40 million in cap space.
I don't get it.
Like, why wouldn't you be signing it? To me, that is wasting resources. Like, if you think about all the teams, like the Browns or the Colts or the Raiders or all these teams that at the beginning of this CBA were in a bad spot, and then they thought, okay, let's create a lot of salary cap space. We need flexibility. That's the way to go. And then they started rolling over $50 million a year. That's, to me, like a total waste of resources. I think the smarter teams like the Eagles are now playing it so tight to the cap and just realizing how flexible, just make the contracts flexible, and then you can do it. Because basically they're deciding when they trade Dwayne Brown or when they don't sign Jadeveon Clowney that you're just like going to be worse.
Yeah. And look, I understand to some extent if you're planning ahead for that next extension. But then I look at teams like the Colts and I just don't get it personally. I don't. But so I tend to agree with you there. It's funny because one of the teams you suggested as a potential trade target was Seattle, right? Who did what Houston should have done and traded away Frank Clark when they could actually get a good return, a return that I was pleased with. Not necessarily that I thought Seattle should have traded Clark, but at least they did it on time and they got something back, a first round back, which at this point with Clowney, it's like, okay, well, if you hold on to a year and let him walk, you get a third round comp pick, right? So you're really going to trade him for like a second? Is that even worth it?
Right. It's not, which is why I kind of don't think he will be traded in the end. I think they're putting it out there, if I just had to guess, that they want someone to come to them with a good offer, and maybe they will get one. But I think they want a veteran player, and I think it's basically because they don't have a left tackle. And so bad teams are always having the same problems year after year. Like, they can't fix the same problem. And now the Texans seem like they're trying to fix that problem by trading away the most important player in Bill O'Brien's only playoff victory.
I think if you...
like, that was the guy. I happened to be at that game, which I'm not at a ton of games. I go to the playoffs, but that was like the Jadeveon Clowney moment. Like, people talk about Jadeveon Clowney like he's hurt a lot. He's played among the top five edge rusher snaps over the last 3 years. I mean, he plays 900 snaps a year. He is crazy because he always finishes the year incredibly strong. Like, he's a different player in November, December in the playoffs than he's been, which is what you would think you want.
Yeah, I think the only way it would make sense to me is if they got Trent Williams. And I don't know what kind of picks would be involved in that. But if it was the Seahawks, you know, for example, Seahawks aren't going to give him a first for him. You know, maybe a second, which, again, I agree. I don't think it's worth it. I do think it would be interesting for Seattle, because it's really, that would just be like a talent bet, right? If they gave him a high pick, they'd be the Seahawks saying, we like Jadeveon Clowney more than Frank Clark. Which, you know, what, to each their own. I'm not sure I agree with that personally. It's a different skill set.
I'd take Clowney.
You would?
I know he doesn't have like pass rush moves, but he is, and maybe they don't think that skill set will age well, but he is maybe the strongest player in the NFL. I mean, his pass rush move is essentially just push the guy in front of him into the quarterback or get by, and it works. Like, that's what he does.
More versatile.
And he's a great run,
than Clark.
Run stuffer.
Yeah, not just a run stuffer, even if you're like, you know, dropping him into coverage.
I only put that out there because the Seahawks just seem like one of the only teams that would be kind of crazy enough.
They've
to
done
just
stuff.
Do it. They just like doing stuff
like that. Like, yeah, right. And you mentioned the Rams, who I would also put into that category as teams that are, you know, crazy enough to do it and all in. And the one I would push, just having been around the team a little bit lately, they're really high on Dante Fowler. He looks like amazing in practice. So, you know, we'll see. That's always been.
Why
kind of,
not get another one? But you're right. I mean, they would have a hard time. With
I think
the cap,
they would rather
actually
allocate the cap elsewhere.
Because if you trade for Clowney, you're just hoping basically to get a great year out of him, and that you do get the advantage of 3 weeks to negotiate with him exclusively. And you're thinking, oh, this is a guy we'd want to invest in long term, and we give him that $110 million contract next February.
So the Trent Williams thing, there's another person of interest for which that would come up later. So I'm going to put a pin in that. And because I don't want to talk about Washington. I don't want to talk about them anymore. But I want to talk about different member of that Houston football team. But before I get to that, my next person, we're just starting off on a really depressing note here, is Derwin James.
Yeah.
I hate this. So for those who are blessedly not on NFL Twitter, I don't even know how to explain it. Why do NFL writers all love the Chargers so much? Why are there so many of us? And it's been going on for years.
I don't know. I think I'm off it. I'm now official. Like, I've been there. I've had them in the conference championship, I think, before the season started, 3 straight years. Last year, they got close enough where I think I'm just going to retire it. I'm feeling bad vibes. But I think it's because you look at the top of their roster, and they have 10 difference makers. And they have depth. And when you're doing the thing that you've done in all the division previews that you do, and you just kind of look at the depth
it's
charts.
It's insane.
Like, there's always
the defense
right. Always looks pretty. Like, it looks like they have a smart approach. Tom Telesco's been really good.
Tom Telesco doesn't get more heat?
Because he's so boring. Like, he doesn't talk. He's not a self promoter. A lot of it is just you know, do they want to talk? And when he does talk, he doesn't give up anything. But he drafts really well.
Really well.
And the James injury is a killer, though, because he's the guy that, like, that if everyone on that defense who's really good does their job, like, he's the one, and Bosa's the one that's going to do the extra that kind of makes everyone better, especially the safety group. Like, Derwin James made that group better, and now you're at the time of the year where you know, back in June, everyone's slotting, okay, they drafted Nasir Adderley. That'll be great. He'll start next to Derwin James. And this is the time of year usually you realize, oh, he's not ready. Or in the case of Adderley, he hasn't practiced all month, and the odds on him playing anytime early in the season aren't very high. And then suddenly you have a problem there.
So we did this exercise, I don't know if you saw, at ESPN.com, where we all built like 10-person teams for the next 3 years. Like I took Mahomes, you took, you know, I didn't take a running back, but you took, I took DeAndre Hopkins, whatever. And I think everybody took Derwin. I don't have it in front of me, but it's just such a no-brainer, right? I mean, I think sometimes the idea of like DBs who are multiple gets a little bit overblown today when we talk about, oh, well, these days, you know, Nikola's the new base and you need a DB who can do everything on the field, but he literally can play every freaking position. And he was on the field 99% of defensive snaps, according to Stats and Info. I mean, you just look at, like, the only DB in the NFL with triple-digit tackles, multiple sacks, multiple interceptions.
And he was a rookie.
And it's just, and obviously he benefits from all of those other players, from this, you know, the terrific pass rush. But it'll help. Adderley helps. Getting back Denzel Perryman helps. Jerry Tillery looks great in the preseason. But in the end, I don't think that they can compensate for his absence. And by the way, we're talking about a team that was in dime 64% of the time last year. So radically going to have to change the way they play defense.
Well, that's part of it, is I think he allowed them to get Gus Bradley out of his worst tendencies, which is just kind of line up and play. And they were actually pretty creative last year and a more fun defense to watch. I mean, they need Joey Bosa. He didn't really have a good year. That's one reason to like their defense getting a little better. But James is, if you just kind of go through the names on the Chargers, if you were to name who are the most important Chargers in a row, it's Rivers, Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, Derwin James, Melvin Ingram, Melvin Gordon, Russell Okung. So that's about the top eight. Like, three of those guys are not available. Their left tackle suffered a life, you know, Russell Okung had a pulmonary embolism, is not going to have a checkup on that until the end of August. He's going to miss the start of the season. Who knows? There's really no way to know what's going to happen with his career. And so that's like three of their best eight players, and their offensive line is a mess. I know that's off the Derwin James topic, but
no,
it makes me depressed.
The hope was that when we did the division preview, I was like, all right, really just the offensive line. Otherwise, we are cool with the chart. They even can kick now. Like, nothing to worry about. But if your offensive line is a mess and your running back is, you know, we can, God knows we've covered the territory of how much that'll matter, but the counter is, well, they have an elite defense and the defense will carry them through the beginning of the season.
At the end of the regular season, their offensive line was terrible. They were not the same team the last 4 weeks of the year. Yes. They were basically like the rest of Phillip Rivers' career.
Yeah, the offensive line was a disaster. I will say the guards, you know, they're really betting big on Forrest Lamp, and he's looked pretty decent. Feeney looked fine in the preseason. But yeah, it's an issue. So, and I think
No like guard that's barely played in his career has ever been talked about more than Forrest Lamp.
It's the name is my theory, because it's really easy to remember. And like,
I also think the fact they don't really have home games is a factor. It's more that I'm just worried they're going to come back to earth, and they just seem like a really logical team.
Well, yeah, a team that was like deeply unlucky for the last six, and honestly, all of Phillip Rivers' career, our beloved Hall of Famer Phil Rivers, was really lucky last year. You know, in many ways, not every way, but in terms of close games and making field goal, all the things that regress year to year. So I'd have some concerns about that. On a more positive note, well, positive for fans of a certain team that's disliked by most of the NFL, the next person I want to talk about is Josh Gordon.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a Patriots fan. I don't even try to hide it at this point.
So let's just start there then. Super Bowl, it's over. Should we even play the season?
I came into this year thinking it was crazy that people were talking about the Patriots as one of the favorites, and maybe that's like the fan in me.
I think the defense is really good.
Yeah, on paper, but I don't trust defenses year to year. I didn't think they had any edge rushing, although Chase Winovich looks like he could.
What the hell?
Solve that, maybe. Part
it's
of that.
So infuriating watching him as a non-Patriots fan, like most of America. It's very upsetting.
I just felt that when they won that Super Bowl, and I thought this, the one before too, like that was it. That was enough. Like, it has to end at some point. Brady is 42. Just logically, the Chiefs, the Steelers, some other teams are more logical to be favorites going into this year. But Gordon does remove what like was the fans' biggest worry. It wasn't mine. I don't think it was high on Bill Belichick's list of concerns, which was the receivers. Because now you have Gordon, who was really good last year. I love that Belichick pointed out right away how smart Gordon was. Like, some receivers come in there and they never really pick it up. Like Chad Ochocinco, I think, basically cost them a Super Bowl by investing snap after snap into him for a year. But Belichick likes pointing out the players that people don't call smart are smart, and Gordon picked it up. He's on the outside. It's the first guy really since Randy Moss they've had on the outside that can win one-on-one. Jacoby Myers is an undrafted free agent who I think is going to be a factor. They had to take him off the field at one point against Tennessee in joint practices because they wanted Brady to throw to someone else.
He doesn't
throw to anyone else. You have Philip Dorsett, which is a nice role player. You have N'Keal Harry. If he comes up, you've got they're fine. It's one of those years that they'll throw the ball to James White 75 times.
And Sony Michel, apparently.
And Sony Michel.
He's been running around some practice. I'm actually just really curious to see what this Patriots offense looks like this year because.
I am too.
I mean, the Patriots, as much as I, like every other fan in America, am somewhat frustrated by their, perpetual success, from a football perspective, they are always the most fascinating team to me. The way that offense evolves year to year, the things that the defense does generally, but, I think there's a really good chance it'll look pretty different from last season. And as a Jacoby Myers fantasy owner in my dynasty league with Daniel Kelly, feeling pretty good about that. I can't remember what round. It was like a super late round. I wasn't immediately thrilled about Gordon. No, I was. I mean, it's the closest thing they've had to Moss Welker. That combination of him and Edelman.
I didn't even mention Edelman when I'm going through it. It was a big revelation, I think, because they started calling some routes and some passes with Gordon that you hadn't really seen in a while. And it's like, actually, it would be good if Tom Brady can throw, one-on-one kind of like 50-50 balls to the outside to like a big receiver. That could be something that would help the offense. And I think he's just a guy, though, it's bigger than football, and he knows it. I think the players know it. The everyone around him is really rooting for him. But I just worry about him because I think there's this sense that it's like he wants to be an example of what a recovering addict can do, and that's like a lot to put on yourself as a person. Just like reading everyone talking about it. I mean, he's really well liked, and you obviously root for him as a person, but he's had the history that he's had.
Yeah, no, I mean, in some ways, no better place to be than New England. Just even though you're right, there's a lot of pressure on him and a lot of eyes on him. There's no place that's better at sort of diffracting that, or is diffracting a word?
Yeah, that's
refracting,
a word.
Diffracting, deferring. He just brings such a different element to his offense. Not only the outside threat, but they're so much better at play action. We saw on the field, which, by the way, is a thing that I was just thinking about the other day. This is an extreme tangent, but we talk a lot about how the run game does or doesn't affect play action. And I'd like to see someone study different receivers because as I've been kind of looking team to team, obviously the quality of the quarterback matters and whether the offensive line can sell it or whatever this night.
No, that is like,
he's one of those.
I love this.
He's one of those guys, though, where it just works. I pulled the numbers, but I won't get into that. It's boring.
They want to be able to do everything, though. And that was one of the reasons, especially before Gordon came back, that I didn't think they're going to be a favorite necessarily, is that they don't have the tight ends. And I know they change year to year, but that's just such a foundational part of who they are. That's part of the reason why they can go up tempo at any moment that they want, is they can call any play that they want. They can run out of any formation. It's because they have the tight ends that can pull it off. Even when it's Dwayne Allen on the field. Like, there's a reason why they paid Dwayne Allen $6 million. They just think that that's important, and that's kind of foundational to what they do. And without Gronk, without Ben Watson for the first 4 weeks of the season, I mean, they just don't have options.
They ran almost no 12 last year. I think I pulled that up. For some reason, I still decided to take Matt LaCrosse in like the 18th. By the way, Cooper Kupp, another receiver who drastically improves how good his team is at play action. I guess it's like if you can run deep crosser. I don't know.
I mean, losing Gronk, though, it's not to be overlooked, and maybe he'll be back.
Please. Yeah, he's going to be back. Stay with the Rams for a second. Next person of interest, Darrell Henderson.
I love this list of players. It's like, you know, NFL greats, and then Rams third string running back, Darrell Henderson.
It's a way of talking about Todd Gurley without talking about Todd Gurley's team.
You're part of the Ramley now, though. Like, how is that feeling to become a Rams fan after all these years?
I'm more of...
Like, do you look back on the Jeff Fisher era differently now?
I'm like an uncle who married into the Ramley and shows up at family reunions and doesn't really talk to anyone and is like on his phone the whole time. That's my role in the Ramley.
But you're going to grow over the years, you know, it's going to evolve, this relationship. And I just wonder what the Seahawks fans think about that. You know, you did the live show there. It's interesting.
It's weird that the Rams fans aren't more suspicious of me.
No, they don't care. They're fine.
We'll be quick on Henderson, but I think I find his presence on this team really interesting because it unlocks to me the question not only of how are they going to use Gurley, how do they regard him, is he healthy, yada yada. I also, by the way, just like hate talking about players' health because we don't know, and it's like the most boring thing to me in the world to try to speculate as to whether a player's knee is 80% or 85%. But I think the presence of Darrell Henderson invites questions about what Sean McVay's offense is going to look like this year, and that is something I find very interesting because people are really divided in the Ramley about And here's, I'll put this, this could be like a completely, like a 45 minute conversation in itself. But I think after the Super Bowl, there is this debate going on about whether or not McVay's offense needs to change and evolve. And so you bring in Henderson and there's all these questions. Well, maybe like they need to, you know, vary the personnel, use more 12 and 21, and maybe they should have Darrell Henderson running out of shotgun, which is something the Rams don't do with running backs, and maybe this. Or the counterargument is that's an overreaction. This was the most successful offense, and yeah, the interior offensive line kind of collapsed a little bit towards the end, and they're fine. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
I fall on the, of course they have to evolve. That's what every great coach does. You're not going to come back the same the next year. Like, it just doesn't work that way. The more seasons I've gone through with this, like, the more your assumptions are so useless in the offseason over, like, which offensive line is going to be good. That's completely unpredictable. Which defense is going to be good? Players to show up different and what schemes are going to be. And Sean McVay, who, you know, is one of the brightest minds in the league, is certainly not going to come do everything the same way. This offense is always going to be changing based on how teams are trying to attack them.
Yeah.
And or else, like, he's not doing his job. And I don't think Darrell Henderson was a bad choice. I'm not saying that. That's, I mean, okay. I think it is interesting.
Well, I think that, okay, so, like, just to kind of wrap this up, the question of how and whether it needs to change,
like, how do you think he's going to be used?
Right. I think that they want, I would not be surprised if both him and Gurley are on the field at the same time a little bit. I was talking to you a bit about the Cowboys game. So Jalen Smith, who news broke, just signed a 5-year, $65 million deal with Dallas. It makes him a top 5 linebacker, according to Adam Schefter. I'd have to look at that, but that seems pretty team friendly. But in any case, there was a moment in the last game where he ran a wheel route, and I didn't realize it was Jalen Smith, and he looked really fast, and I was like, holy, that's Jalen Smith. Like, that's legit. Like, that's something that could happen in an NFL game, which you're always praying for in preseason. And I wouldn't be surprised if he is used also a lot as a receiver if they line him up, which they, you know, they happen in Memphis quite a bit. I just think the question is, okay, so there are all these advantages that come to the way the Rams' offense is run, which is, you know, almost exclusively 11, and it certainly helps Todd Gurley in many ways by spreading defenses out. And then we saw that countered. I'm doing the thing I said I wouldn't do, which is we could have an entire 45-minute conversation about this. But, you know, we saw that countered in the Super Bowl, and we don't really need to relitigate all of that in some ways. But I think the question to me is going to be, like, do defenses make those adjustments? And then if so, does McVay mix it up in games? That, yeah. I think that's a very long-winded way of answering that. Like, that's what I'm curious to see out of McVay.
I think they just needed – you can't stay static, and they needed another weapon. What's another weapon that can actually get on the field for them? It's another running back. Like, it's another – either get two of them on the field at the same time. Obviously, you reduce Todd Gurley's snaps. I just don't expect – I mean, the time that McVay had the microphone during the preseason game was so awesome and so fascinating, and the way – his mind works. Like, they're going to have different plays. Everything is going to be different. I just don't think that you can run that same offense year after year.
Yeah. It sure works, though. I mean, when you look at the reasons why they struggled, it was the Eagles, the Bears. I really think the inside of that offensive line is something people underestimated down the stretch and is something that's going to change this year. But I agree. All right, we'll take a quick break from this 45-minute conversation about Super Bowl. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Upstart. Keeping my hands down. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your FICO score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, a revolutionary lending platform, I did it with the hands, that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates. This is really interesting, to help you pay off your high interest credit card debt. So it goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. It actually rewards you based on your education and job salary in the form of a smart interest rate. Upstart makes it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes without affecting your credit score. The best part? Once a loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day! Over 200,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loan, fund their wedding, or make a larger purchase. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina, M-I-N-A, to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes, and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Mina.
Question.
Boom.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
You got the swag game is doing well. You gave me a hat when I arrived. Lenny
don't,
on
don't
it.
Don't tell him, because everybody keeps asking me for hats, and not everyone who's on the show has got a hat. And
I hope you don't show up in person.
Vinuzzi asks, as always, if you leave a review in iTunes and it's positive, 5 stars only, I'll answer the question. Let's take a few. Wants to know what I need to see out of Josh Allen. So this is a positive review from Vinuzzi, but he actually gave me 1 star, but I think it was a mistake. So I'm answering the question to say, Vinuzzi, you got to go back and give 5 stars. But it was like this, there was a whole preamble how much he likes the podcast. So I think it was an accident. It's kind of a workaround. It's the last time I'll do that. What do I need to see out of Josh
Allen?
I feel
like Vinuzzi should be punished, not be rewarded. You're nicer than I am.
Maybe I shouldn't answer this question. It's funny because we're going to talk about Lamar Jackson after the break, and I actually think I want to see a few similar things out of them. And those are kind of the comparable quarterbacks for me in terms of development and expectations at this point. But I would say, like, I don't know. I'm trying to get
this is really tough for you.
I know. Well, I'm trying to. Bills fans are always hard on me for being too hard on Josh Allen coming out of the draft. And I think you can win with him. I do. But I do think, you know, he obviously needs to improve his accuracy and decision making. You can win with him if he becomes a completely different human.
I mean, good things about him. He's a beast.
He's a truck.
He is the closest thing to Cam Newton. I think that
people got mad at me on the last two podcasts ago. I said that they should model the offense after what you do with Cam.
Absolutely. Especially early in his career, like what he did as a runner and just how he trucks people. And then his good throws are pretty great. You know, yeah. It's just totally erratic. And there's right. a couple good signs in the preseason, but I don't really put
yes.
too much into that.
I mean, it's pretty similar. The throws he makes are different from Lamar, like the ones that are good. And I think Lamar's a better decision maker. We'll get to also Lamar, the running upside is so much higher that it's just a different conversation altogether. But
unless they wanted to make Josh Allen into Cam Newton and kind of make him a red zone runner, which to me isn't the craziest idea, but they don't seem to want to
well,
go
that's the problem, right?
That route.
It's like last season, it felt like they wanted him to be the traditional dropback guy, and dude was just looking for a running lane on every throw. Jody Blanco asks, if I thought about getting another dog to pair with Lenny. Jody, I think about this all the time. I'm on the road a lot, so it's hard. There was a weekend where we had another dog because my husband found this other dog in the rain. So we took her in for a weekend, and then we saw a flyer advertising. And in the weekend we had this dog, we took her to the vet, whatever. Vet told us she was Lenny's age. Turned out she was 14. But Lenny, you know, he was like a good younger brother to this dog, and it was very inspiring. Kelso 485 asks, how will Eli Manning be remembered? Rex Grossman with a better name? A guy with Brett Favre talent who got Nick Foles hot at the right time? I'm going to give this a brief answer. He will be remembered as secondary to Philip Rivers in my
own. Oh. Can I jump in with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, you can answer that one.
I mean, he'll be remembered wrongly by both sides. You know what I mean? Like, he'll get too much credit by everyone that just says he's a lock Hall of Famer and yeah. quote-unquote clutch. And get no credit from everyone else who thinks he's been garbage. He's only been, I would argue, a top five quarterback one season in his career. He was legitimately good in 2008.
He was.
He didn't even win the Super Bowl. And he was around 10 to 12, I would say, for much of his career, which is a really solid NFL career that has never missed a snap. You know, that's worth plenty. It's just not a Hall of Fame. You know,
I would not.
Fame.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not to be totally knocked. Like, you could win, like, I guess that's obvious. I was like, you could win Super Bowls with the other man. You did.
If we're using Super Bowls as a metric for the Hall of Fame, that completely changes the conversation about the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Right. To me, he's not a Hall of Famer because he wasn't
dominant.
He didn't excel at his position almost at any point in his career. Yeah. If you had asked for who is the top 10 quarterbacks, he almost never was in that group. Maybe I would say I went back and looked at one point because I've spent too much time on this too, that there's probably like two or three other seasons where you would put him like 6 to 10. So that's a good career.
But
that's it.
He's a good quarterback. He was. Chris Testes, and this kind of sets up the final question, 21 asks, is it possible that New England in its, he says recently, so you can really define that, however, had four GOATs. Brady, so the best. Brady, Belichick, yes. Gronk,
yes.
And Dante Scarnecchia.
Ooh.
Love it, Chris Estes, 21, thinking outside the box there. So is there someone else? I think all of those are, that's fair.
The greatest offensive line coach of all time?
Sure. I guess the only Patriot that comes to mind to me, I mean, Randy Moss, 2007. Even that year, Reggie Wayne technically put up better numbers than I think.
I mean, people love John Hanna, but when people start talking about 1970s right. guards, that doesn't
like
really,
how recent are we going
really
here? Yeah.
No, there's no one else that would be close to that Mitch. I like the Scarnecchia love. He's been there 30. This is his 36th year.
I love that he
coaching second also, most all time of any assistant coach. He survived six coaches there. Sorry.
The ultimate goat move is to take a year off so everyone knows how freaking good you are, and then be like, "Oh right, y'all thought you could be great without me. Well, you couldn't." Next name, next person of interest is, we already started talking about him. It's Lamar. So you did a great story on Lamar, I want to say 2 months ago or something. You were in Baltimore, not 2 months ago. It was actually, I feel like, a lot more recent. And you made a point that I really loved, and I went back to see how you put this, which is, you know, you talked about, well, one, first of all, I've said this on the podcast before, it feels like because of the Chargers game, everybody just wrote him off coming into this season, even though statistically he really was better than Rosen and Allen. You know, I mean, by a lot of metrics. But
better in passing DVOA than Sam Bradford last year.
Or Darnold.
I mean, Darnold.
Hopefully Bradford.
That is like a mental block I have had many times, including once on live television.
I had a dream last night about Sam Darnold.
Really?
People who know how much I like him on this podcast are probably cringing right now, but it was very simple. I was just at a party and I met him and he said, really love your internet presence. Can you cut that out, Dan?
No, please.
No, I'm keeping it.
I feel like that's about what he would be like. He'd be a low key, cool presence at a party. I don't think he would be intrusive.
I think he seems so chill.
You wouldn't talk to him that much. He would just kind of come up, say that, and be on his way.
I love the show Bachelor in Paradise, and I was on Instagram looking at one of the contestants, and you know how it shows you if someone liked it that you also follow? Darnold had been liking some posts.
Wow. Yeah. That's big.
The other thing you mentioned, and this is what I kind of want to drill on, is like I think that the interesting question about Lamar Jackson is how good of a passer does he have to be, right? Because there's a million interesting questions. Can your accuracy improve over time? And I think it can. A lot of people dispute that, but to me, if Josh Allen's upside is, or comp, potentially, is Cam Newton, Lamar's Vic. And Vic, we saw, did go on to have like an extremely accurate season, right? With Andy later on in his career. So I do think it's possible, but, beyond the question of like whether or not he can grow as a passer, I think it's debatable how good of a passer he needs to be. Because as you pointed out in this piece, his running ability, the only comp is Vic. There's no other player, Greg, that comes to mind for me who is as electric as he is.
And the difference is that NFL was different. If Vic came out now, I think people would know how to use him. He was playing for, Reeves.
Yeah. Well, yes. That was
Jim Mora. It's like they had no idea. Mike Mularkey was an offensive coordinator there, I think. It's like they didn't know what to do, and they are building the offense around Lamar Jackson. And I don't think he needs to be that great of a passer because his running opens up so much, and he has the perfect coordinator in Greg Roman who at least is going to go for it. Like, you never know if it's going to work. But I was at camp, and Mark Ingram said just – the volume of the types of running plays and formations are outrageous. They're one of those teams. They say, oh, you can't reveal anything in the preseason. If you watch the Ravens, they like can't help but line up in a different formation every snap because that's all they do. They're going to like get wide, then they're going to condense. They're going to go I formation. They're going to do a little bit of everything. And that's so significant. Not only is Lamar Jackson to me the best runner since Michael Vick, it's probably like a lot, and he turned Gus Edwards into a top five back. I mean, Gus Edwards had more yards than Christian McCaffrey or Ezekiel Elliott down the stretch last year.
People always underestimate the effect of a dual threat quarterback on the running back and the offensive line, by the way, how much offensive lines can benefit from that. It's something you saw a lot with Russell Wilson for his first couple of years at Seattle. It's no coincidence that Russell Wilson comes into Seattle and Marshawn Lynch's career is suddenly, you know, revived. You're just adding an extra dude on the field who can take off. That run he had in week two, what was it? That was called back for the...
of the preseason.
When I was watching that, this year, just the thought I had was he's better than most running backs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
there's no doubt.
He's so much more explosive. And, you know, I'm very excited to see what this Ravens offense does. I've said on this podcast because it's not just... oh, establish the run. Oh, it's not. It's not an old school grind, you know, just pounded into eight men in the box types of offense. They do seem to be bent not only on doing creative things, but building this actually around him, which is just something, like, to go back to your first point. Dual threat quarterbacks in the NFL don't have a great record, but they also haven't really been given a chance at many. If you look back at many of the dual threat guys over the years, I mean, we're going to get to this guy in Deshaun Watson and what's going on with him down there. And they're not often given a good offensive line. They're not often given weapons who are tailored to their skill sets. The Ravens are doing that. They are all in on him, and it's kind of amazing.
The whole organization is, and that was impressive. Not only was he 21 years old starting, but they didn't really have time to... the fact that they could do that on the fly is really impressive. And everyone's saying, okay, now teams are going to be ready to stop that. Well, it's not like Greg Roman's going to just roll out with the exact same offense they had a year ago. It's going to be really different. They have two really good tight young tight ends, or at least one really good young
Mark
tight
Andrews
end, and Mark
really
Andrews.
Young.
Hayden Hurst is
not young.
He's not young, and he's out there. He's playing Nick Boyle. They love. They're going to have two tight ends.
They have Nick Boyle, huh?
Oh, I mean, on the field pretty much
yeah.
every snap.
Well, when your quarterback can kind of only throw seams, it's kind of weird.
Right, but it like opens up, and, you know, as a Lamar Jackson fan, which is, it's weird if you're not a fan. It's like, I'm
the
just a fan of.
The whole conversation around him is really
I'm a fan
messed
of
up.
Fun.
It's messed up.
I'm a fan of fun. Like, yeah. I'm a fan of football that is fun to watch. I still get really excited watching. And, like, how can you not have fun watching him play? Like, his vision, he is, I think he has, like, next level running back skills, and you just don't see people, like, or offenses like that. They're going to be so much harder than other teams to prepare for.
The vision thing is a good point, too, because, you know, watching him pretty closely last season, also at Louisville, he can read the field. He makes right decisions. It's just the execution of the throws with him and the footwork, to me, anyways, and the fact that he can't throw outs. But it's not a mind
he can.
Thing.
I mean, he can't at the level of the top 15 yeah. quarterbacks in the league. Everything you've heard out of Ravens camp this year has been good. The guys that have been there every day, the beat writers that have been there every day, say it's night and day. Not only does he have a command of the playbook, which he admitted last year, you know, it took a while. They were calling the plays into his headset during the preseason and everything. He has just been much more controlled and accurate, and he's not like blowing people away, but they just said it's like been a really positive passing month.
Hey, we love to see it.
And they play the Cardinals and the Dolphins the first 2 weeks.
They play, so I think, the worst slate of run defenses in the NFL. So it's like, you know, run the ball.
You might as well get on board early before he plays the Dolphins and the Cardinals.
I want to do this one kind of quickly because I don't have a ton to say. We don't have ton to say yet, but I wanted to talk about Devin Bush. And when I looked up, I wanted to see. So at the first game, he comes out. He has 10 tackles, 7 solo. He's okay. He was good. He was really good. But I wanted to see if Steelers fans were overreacting at all. And when I just kind of Google newsed, the first thing that came up was a article on a Steelers site saying Devin Bush is now Bobby Wagner. So that's where we are as a nation. Whenever I talk about the Steelers, over the last year and a half or so, whenever we look at this team, whenever we look at this roster, whenever we look at the ways that we've struggled, it always comes back to Ryan Shazier and that hole in the middle of the field. How much, if he is, not Bobby Wagner, but if he is, you know, a rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year candidate, how much do you think that affects this team's playoff chances?
It helps it so much because that was their biggest problem last year. They make their inside linebackers look better than they really are because Javon Hargrave and Stephon
the
Tuitt
line is
Cameron
fantastic. Yeah,
Hayward are awesome. Although they need Tuitt to be a little more like he was a couple of years ago. He's exactly what they need. It's a really tough position to get right from the start because he's calling the plays. I think they'll probably rotate.
I saw that.
You know,
which they didn't do with Shazier. So
like three guys, you know, and I think you might not play every single snap, but I think, you know, Edmonds from the Bills last year is a great example where he was swimming and was a total liability for half the season and was awesome the last six games when it kind of clicked mentally. And Devin Bush seems ahead of that. And I didn't think that first performance was great, but then when I watched it, it's like he dominated. He was solid against the starters, made a couple mistakes.
Yeah.
And dominated the backups. But whatever, if you're a rookie that can step in week one and already be playing that position, that's impressive. They think that he's the real deal.
I made the mistake of reading about it before watching it. You know, I went back and watched the first few drives.
I made the mistake of writing about it before watching it. Bad job.
I mean, he was good. Listen, with all the rookie caveats and all of that, he was good. But he was not the next. He wasn't Bobby Wagner.
They have a really good secondary, though, too. And I just think the team around him
do
is better.
Do you think they have a really good secondary? Okay, let's still there.
I think the Steelers are like sneaky one of the, four or five Super Bowl favorites. Like I thought they were last year too, and nothing that happened really changed my mind on that.
I'm not worried about the offense at all, but I don't think the secondary is good. Why do you think it's good?
Well, maybe I'm buying the hype, but they, you know, in those in the preseason, in the training camp articles, like Cameron Sutton is their training camp MVP. Artie Burns has had a good camp.
On.
They're a little
Artie
deeper.
Burns.
Steven Nelson. I like Joe Hayden.
Steven Nelson.
Edmund, the other Edmonds.
That
supposedly looked really good.
Yeah.
It's a solid enough secondary. I just think they're a team without any holes. They're the kind of like the Chargers. How I always look at the Chargers, like they have no holes.
The holes that I would have pinned on the Steelers would have been the secondary, and then
it's fine.
I think beyond. This is, I actually hate saying this. I was going to say after Juju, the skill players, but it's the Steelers. They can turn, you know, a Starbucks barista into the next best wide receiver. So I'm not going to bother. All right. Speaking of training camp hype, we got two more names, and I want to ask you about a guy who's gotten a lot of hype and who I got a chance to watch in action, sort of, in Hawaii. And that's Kellen Moore. Ooh. And I didn't talk about this during, I said one, like, dorky thing during the game about pre-snap motion and how it was kind of nice to see the Cowboys do that.
Like, how many dorky things do you have in your holster that you can't get out?
I ate so many. And
like, don't you, and do you ever just like hear Andrew Siciliano, I don't want to get you in trouble, but say like some, like use QB wins as a stat.
He doesn't.
And just want to just jump in there.
Well, MJ, our mutual friend, MJD,
maybe was
trying
too.
To poke me on the running stuff. And he, but the one thing I noticed when I rewatched this game and wanted to die listening to my own voice, but there were a few things that caught me with Kellen Moore. It wasn't just the use of pre-snap motion and some actual variation in the receiver usage and how the receivers were used, but there was the touchdown that it was Tony Pollard, generational running back. they were in 11, so he had the defense spread. It was just something, like, you know, when you think of Scott Linehan and the Cowboys last 2 years, you think of them just, like, bunching everyone up, marching out their two tight ends to block and just trying to slam Zeke Elliott through the line, and that's not what you saw. And so I'm not buying the hype necessarily, but I think there's definitely going to be a significant amount of upside in this Cowboys offense.
No doubt. I mean, I think they got by with their talent and being a quote-unquote execution offense, but they're like that on defense too. You know, we talked about the Ravens being tough to prepare for. Like, the Cowboys have been the easiest team in the NFL to prepare for. And the fact that Kellen Moore, I think, is going to do a lot of things different is going to make them very difficult in September, assuming, you know, Ezekiel Elliott's back or Amari Cooper's back. That's kind of been under the radar that he hasn't practiced at all this month. I don't know if that's one of those injuries that it's just like, I want to sit out
just because I'm not getting
training
paid.
Camp. I don't know. Because this is the week actually that you see players that have kind of been waiting come back, and he's still not.
They're back. Not stacked there. I mean, I like Michael Gallup a lot, and I think him and Dak left a lot of yards and touchdowns on the field last year, and he's a great deep threat. But after him, it's Cobb, a bunch of undrafted dudes. Devin Smith is there, caught a few passes. I hadn't heard that name in a while. Second round pick, Jets, two torn ACLs. But yeah, it's Jason Witten, you know?
Stephon Austin's going to get 12 to 15 touches a game. I'm pretty down on the Cowboys in general, but I think Kellen Moore is the most exciting and interesting and best counter to that.
Last name I want to talk about is, takes us all the way back to the beginning of the conversation when we talked about Clowney, and that's Deshaun Watson. And it kind of, you know, when we're talking about Lamar and dual threat quarterbacks and teams not giving them good offensive lines historically, I am officially very worried for Deshaun Watson this year, and it makes me very sad.
Yeah, I am too, because of the offensive line. It really cracks. I love John McClain, who writes for the Houston Chronicle, and he had some article a couple days ago that was like, well, after a couple weeks of seeing Matt Khalil, it appears the Texans have, you know, realize they have a left tackle problem, which is like, that's why you sign Matt Khalil, is you know you have a left tackle problem. It shouldn't take watching him come back from a major injury to realize it. And it's a huge issue because Deshaun Watson is going to hold the ball, I think, a lot anyways. I just think that's who he is. I think he's a little bit like Aaron Rodgers in that way, and I think a lot of good comes from it. And he doesn't throw, like Rodgers, he doesn't throw interceptions, really. So you can live with him taking a few too many sacks if it means big plays. But there's like a level, like last year, where just the coaching has to be so much better in his. Maybe he's a little bit of a part of it in terms of the awareness of blitzes, but just teams teed off on them, and it was hard to watch.
Did you read the PFF piece on whether quarterbacks are responsible for their sacks. Like, the conclusion was that quarterbacks bear most of the responsibility for pressure, which totally, as a person who's watched the Seattle Seahawks, I think that's a completely fair analysis. And the way they did it, I'll try to sum it up neatly, was just kind of looking at consistency, and regardless of what's happening on the offensive line and all the way back to college, there are certain quarterbacks who hold on to the ball too long and draw a lot of pressure, and it's the way they play. And I think that's totally fair. But every quarterback plays better when he's not pressured. Like, even Deshaun Watson, who was the most pressured quarterback in football and was very good under pressure. Let's see. His DVOA under pressure was negative 27, which is good. But without pressure, 56.2. Like, even if quarterbacks are responsible for their pressure, you still want to put out the best. Now, it's interesting from a team-building perspective, which is, okay, there are certain teams that look at quarterbacks in their skill set and say, well, maybe we don't need to invest as much in the line for various reasons, and they're going to draw a ton of pressure regardless. That's just the nature of the quarterback. You know, yada, yada. They can escape it, whatever. But what they are doing is so deeply unfair to him.
Well, they don't know what they're doing. You know, they draft.
Oh, my God. Have you been watching Andre Dillard in the preseason?
Is this really mean
to talk about this here? Also, how did they not know they're going to get jumped by Philadelphia for him?
Well, that was my theory of what's driven Bill O'Brien, you know, crazy is that position. Because, okay, you draft Titus Howard, you draft another tackle. They've just drafted and taken so many players, and they signed these injured guards that used to play for the Chiefs, and they've tried so much. It's kind of like the Seahawks for a while, where people are always wrong and saying, like, how come they don't invest in their offensive line? It's like, no, they actually have. They're just terrible at it, and they can't coach it. And that's where
I'm doing the Steve Carell thank you for those who can't. I mean, all Seahawks fans know this to be fact, but.
Oh, I'm part of the, you know, I'm part of
you
Seahawks
are. Yeah,
Twitter.
You're part of, yeah, I saw that.
I try to be. They can't coach offensive line, which is, it's crazy, because if you can give Bill O'Brien credit for anything, he does coach quarterbacks pretty well, and that is one thing that makes me less worried about Deshaun Watson. I mean, Bill O'Brien was there for that first stretch of Deshaun Watson's career. Even last year, for the most part, they got a lot done considering the offensive line, and he can be pretty creative. And Watson's coming off his second year now from the torn ACL. It was pretty impressive what he did, and I think O'Brien was a little more conservative last year in terms of using his legs, which is totally understandable, and they won't be anymore. But they can get out of that Matt Khalil contract, and I do think O'Brien's got to read the tea leaves and think, if this doesn't work this year, I could get fired.
Yes.
And so I'll just trade Clowney for Trent Williams. Yes. Just do it.
Do it. Do it.
Why wouldn't
do
you do it?
Well, I
wouldn't. Like, in a vacuum, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't have done it in February or March, maybe, but I saw something that they didn't want to go for Williams because, you know, he's aging and they want, like, a long-term solution. Just, like, find any solution.
You don't have a long-term solution. There's nothing. You don't have one.
And he's 31. He's had injuries, but that's not crazy old. That's about what Dwayne Brown was when they traded him away, and he's looked great in Seattle.
I mean, Andrew Whitworth is, like, 300.
Yeah. It'll bum me out if they can't take advantage. But Deshaun Watson is so special. And O'Brien, he really is pretty good with like, he got great seasons out of Hoyer.
Yeah, no, he is. Well, what did he do with Watson? Like, he completely redesigned the offense on the fly. He absolutely deserves credit for that.
The quarterback production that he had before Watson showed up actually is a feather in his cap. So it makes me think maybe they'll find a way,
just,
and it won't be as bad as people say.
You have that quarterback. You have arguably the best wide receiver in football, who's younger than Julio, you know, and it's just infuriating to me, I guess. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. That's why people listen to this podcast. All right, before we get to the final segment, one more thing I want to tell you guys about. It's not a person of interest. It's a business of interest, and that's ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. There goes the hand. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they do not stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply for your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
5 questions. 5th one is from my dog. But I'm just going to put this out now. People are going to be really angry with me about this. I have decided not to do his voice anymore.
What?
Because I found that I was dreading it. I wasn't dreading it with someone like you, but like people I'm afraid of, like, it was just something I wasn't looking forward to anymore.
Who are you afraid of that's on your podcast?
I don't know.
Dominic Foxworth? Like, what?
I don't know. My point is,
Schefter.
He's still going to get a question, but I know there's going to be a revolt, a listener revolt, and a lot of blowback, and just let me try this for a while, guys. Just let me see how this feels, if I feel better about it. He's still going to get a question, and it's, you know, I'm not silencing him as some of people have accused me of in the past. So
I don't know. I want to be a good guest, but I also want to.
Are you disappointed?
I am disappointed. Seeing it in person would have been delightful, but
yeah,
I want to speak for sort of the Mina Hive, you know, Mina Pod Hive, that, like, I would listen to a whole podcast that was just voices and Lenny questions. Just like, the 5th question with Lenny, or, you know, I don't know, tough questions with Lenny.
Because those are the
money. Those are the money questions.
Some people don't like it. Some people don't like it. A spinoff pod for Lenny that's just rude questions. Okay, my first question is: so you come from a fantasy background, I know, and I bragged earlier about getting Jacoby Myers in my league with Danny Kelly. Give our listeners a sleeper pick for that.
Oh my god!
The look on your face.
I'm so not prepared.
Well,
like,
just based on preseason, like, someone that you're excited about, a receiver, running back, QB, even, just someone that you feel like, you know, if you were in a dynasty league with me and Danny B. Kelly, that you would go after in the later rounds, perhaps.
Mark Andrews. Does that count?
No, he's like a top.
Is he though?
Yeah.
I looked at back.
He's got to be like a top 7 tight end.
Is he?
You must be.
I don't think he is.
He's no Matt LaCrosse. is Matt LaCrosse even his name? That sounds me. It's no. It's Matt LaCrosse.
It's LaCrosse. Yeah.
But don't judge me later in the season when I make a joke on Twitter about him being Matt LaCrosse.
I'm like an insanely unprepared for fantasy in general. James White. I know that's so boring, but I honestly think like there's. Every 6 years, Kevin Falk would just catch like 90 passes, and this is that James White year.
Sure. I won't judge you. When you're on an airplane, do you prefer to sit in the window or the aisle, and why?
Well, I've changed. Overall, I'd say window, actually.
That's the right answer.
I don't want to be disturbed. I want the option to sleep. I don't want to have to be really aware of the people next to me at all.
I'm the same way. Also, I'm convinced people are looking at my computer. When you're in the window, you can kind of tilt your computer away. The other thing is I just rarely have to go to the bathroom. I'm just like a tank. So
strange flex, but I like it. With kids, though, that it changes the equation a little bit. So if they're with me, and that changes, but I'm, you know, I'm the size of like a 12-year-old girl, so it's like I don't mind.
You should have been in our booth last week. It would fit in perfectly. Question 3. I talk to Kevin Clark about this all the time, which is the nature of various NFL Twitter fan bases and who is the best and the worst and the angriest.
Oh my gosh, I would love to write that article.
I want to do an entire podcast about NFL Twitter fan bases. And because
such a great idea.
Seattle's a very strange one, I think it's fair to say, with a very unique character.
Totally. Really smart, though, and fun. I like the Seahawks one.
Who's the worst Twitter fan base?
Ooh.
See, okay, and I don't think it's like a mainstream. Like, the Cowboys are too big.
No,
to
it's
be
not
bad.
The Cowboys.
Yeah. For
like,
example.
Like people get crazy. Like, the Raiders are all up in your face, but I love the Raiders Twitter because they're so passionate and just, like, insane.
Right.
Giants is up there. Giants are, like, always on the defensive.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
a lot
good
of
one.
Eli, which is, you know, very tiresome.
New England can be pretty rough.
Yeah. I would say the Patriots would probably be right near the top. Like, I don't try to own them.
Okay. You're Jerry Jones.
Saints Twitter is the best, by the way.
And Saints Twitter is good, yeah. By the way, I'm now the king of Falcons Twitter. I don't know if you've caught that, but yeah. I went on a podcast, our friend Adam Lefko, and he asked me who's the most underrated quarterback, and I said Matt Ryan, and that was all it took. And then I just started pandering to them because I loved the attention so much. And I've just been pumping up Matt Ryan. I went around the horn and I did my entire FaceTime about how Matt Ryan is underrated. And now I'm their king. It happened really quickly and I accept it.
They're like they're kind of down and out group that has received so much abuse over the years that any bit of love they just kind of...
It's like adopting a shelter dog.
Jump on.
You know, like they love me. I accept it. Okay, so question four. You're Jerry Jones. Zeke Elliott calls, and he says he'll take the girly deal. Do you go with that?
I would if I was Jerry Jones. It's a strange way to... strange place to put yourself into.
This is my thing with Zeke and the Cowboys, because I got some crap for saying, yeah, sure, the girly deal's fine. In a vacuum, no. Of course I would not pay a running back that much money, but we're not in a vacuum, right? This team, I really believe if Ezekiel Elliott is not on the field, it's going to be chaos. That's why I'm like, okay, whatever, just do the deal with him. Mm. You've got a new offensive coordinator, unproven wide receivers.
Not only that, I'd rather have Zeke than Todd Gurley, A. Yeah. And then B, if you are Jerry Jones, you've kind of built this, you just are in a corner, you've built this team for Zeke, and you've built this star system, and it's like, who are you kidding? You are going to sign Zeke. And it could be worse if he's looking for more. I also think, and I know this, like, I agree with it intellectually that running backs shouldn't get big contracts and all of that. But I also look at it like he's going to get less money than Nate Solder.
Yeah.
You know, by far. And when you look at, like, some people get really bent out of shape about running back contracts, and if they're a top five running back that actually tills the field and stays on, and you're thinking it's a future Hall of Famer, you're going to pay Trent Brown more money than Ezekiel Elliott. And like, people aren't that worried about the Trent Brown thing. It's like, I'm fine.
Right. I think that's a good way to put it. Also, to me, I mean, longevity just matters a lot here, and age, and
it really bothers me. By the way, I didn't have an answer so for the fantasy question, so I have one now. Darwin Thompson. Like, can't you see Darwin Thompson having 1,200 yards for the Chiefs? I can see that so easily taking over in week two.
Speaking of all running backs, like, are replaceable, by the way. Darwin Thompson's kind of exhibit A, why you shouldn't.
And he looks great. Like, week two or three, they're like, yeah, this whole Damian Williams thing, that's fine, or he's hurt, or whatever.
That's a great name. If you're a football player, you should have a name like that, because I really believe if you have a cool name, you're more likely to get paid and fans will embrace
Lamar
him.
Also, by the way, seems like insanely undervalued for fantasy.
Yeah, I know. Someone in our league got him as a QB2, and I was so jealous. Okay. I got Jameis as my QB2, which I'm feeling pretty good about, though. Yeah.
Like, I would take Lamar as a top five fantasy quarterback. It seems wild not to.
Maybe he was this guy's. It was Danny Kelly who got him. All right. Last question's from Lenny. I feel really judged right now. Lenny wants to know. This really isn't going to have the same impact about the voice. Okay, let me just regather. Lenny wants to know if your name was a typo and your parents just decided to roll with it.
I mean, that's like any jerk can be, you know, Greg with one G. That last G finishes it off. You know what I mean? It just ends it.
You have like a thing in your favor and a thing against you. The thing in your favor is Greg Popovich. The thing against you is Greg Williams.
Yeah, Greg Williams has been tough for the 60% G community. That's also my rap name, 60% G. Greg is like a terrible name. Gregory is even worse. Like, no one name. It's one of those names that no one names their kid anymore. There's no Gregs anymore.
Is your name Gregory with two G's?
No, it's Greg. That's the whole thing. Is my parents didn't like Gregory. They want the, you know, my last name is very long, Rosenthal. They didn't want me filling out too many bubbles, you know, in the SATs, or, you know, when you're doing a license.
Like,
Gregory Rosenthal is a mouthful.
Right. It's like that real G's move in silence, but your G doesn't move in silence at all.
I mean, and G's a great letter. You might as well, like, just stack your name with it.